Thanks for checking out the Reveal Vineyard podcast. Our mission is simple. Find God, find others, find yourself. That's it. We hope through these conversations, your spirit will be stirred. For more information on Reveal, you can visit our website at www.revealvineyard.com.
Well, we've discussed so far that this idea of sex was always meant to be far more than just two bodies coming together, but that indeed it is a gift that was given from our Creator to us. And there are practical benefits of it, obviously, of prolonging the species, of reproduction and such like that, but it's far greater than that. The idea, as God created it, was supposed to be a joining of two individuals as in one individuals, right? We talked about that week one, that the two shall become one flesh, that it was a bonding of sorts of both body and soul. There was a meshing together that was supposed to happen, that and under God's ideal, that the man would imprint upon the woman imprint upon the man, or vice versa, that would be what is taking place, that there is an adhesion property that should take place in sexual activity, and that's why God says, wait until the marriage union comes together, because there's supposed to be that bond that occurs, far greater than just physical. So we could say in a very real sense, there's almost a spiritual component to it of sorts. Now, this is not by accident, but it's really by design, that this idea of sex was by design from our Creator to us. Now, we've all seen animals in the animal world who engage in the act of it, and I don't know of any, well, there's a couple that I know of, but I'll get to that. I don't know of any that actually engage in this idea of lovemaking face-to-face and actually eye-to-eye, where you're looking into the depth of the other person, that it is far greater than just this act of it's time to procreate, that it's actually done face-to-face, eye-to-eye. Now, some of you think, well, what about dolphins? Well, they're kind of eyes are on the side of the head. That's different. And there's some crustacean somewhere that goes face-to-face, but they don't even have eyes, So, you know what I'm saying. Is that there's this idea that all the other animals, how they partake, but yet God in his creation of us said it's going to be far greater and far more meaningful than that. It's a joining of a man and woman together. Now, procreation's good, joining of man and woman together, yes, but because it's a gift, it means that it's just also, it's just fun, right? And God says it needs to be fun under the certain boundaries, but if you look at when animals in the animal kingdom engage, it's because it's time to procreate, and God says, well, that's not how it's going to be for you. You can go at it any day, all day, or maybe not all day, but you can, it's a gift to you, and that's God giving it to us, different than with the rest of the side of the animal kingdom. In the female anatomy, there's this thing called the clitoris. That only reason of why it's there is just for pleasure. That's it, period. Has no other part of the body. Now, guys, if you don't know what that is, you have some homework to do, but that's a whole other story. Male men, all right? Other than that, it's a mystery to me, but okay. That is by design. God's saying, look, this is a gift to you. And unfortunately, we have polluted that gift in a very real sense. We have taken that gift out of its box, and we've taken it out of its boundaries, and we've polluted it. And when it's polluted, it brings all kinds of pain, all kinds of dysfunction, because God says you've taken it out of the boundaries of how I intended it to work. Genesis 2:18, God is about to create woman and bring her to man. And it was a blessing that God was about to give for both the woman and the man. But what's interesting is before this blessing comes, God gives this boundary. And he says it in Genesis 2:17. We'll put it up on the screen. He says, but you must not eat from any tree, eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat from it, you will certainly die. Now, we all know the story that they partook of this fruit. And it's almost as if it is as if God is saying, before I'm going to give you the blessing of Eve, I'm setting up the boundaries of what could ruin your relationship. Because God knows that a blessing without boundaries can become a curse, right? A blessing without boundaries can become a curse. And God says, hey, function in this thing of marriage, within the boundary of this thing of sex, within the boundaries of marriage, because if you don't, the blessing that I've created it to be can actually become a curse in your life. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the keys to great sex. Go and put that up there, Rusty. The keys to great sex. Go to the next one. I have to put a disclaimer in, or so I've heard. Okay, that was funnier in my head. Moving right along. This is a tough crowd, man, I'm telling you. All right, here's the number one, keys to great sex. Waiting on you, Rusty, up there. Great sex starts long before the bedroom, right? The gift of sex, great sex, starts long before the bedroom. Now, women seem to intuitively know this. Men, sometimes we need a little help in this area. Men, you may have heard it said, are microwaves. I mean, it doesn't take us long. Dinner is ready in a minute. It doesn't take long to get things going, right? That's just the way that, for whatever reason, it doesn't take long to get us in the mood. Women, often more like crock pots. They need to simmer. And sometimes they need to simmer all stinking day, right? That's just the way it seems to work. Now, men, we're always ready to go. It may not always be on our mind, but it's pretty close, right? Because we're microwaves. It's just like, just zap it and it's ready, you know, it's ready to happen. Ladies, because we're always in the mood and because we're microwaves, we have a gift that you will never have. And that gift is that men have the ability to turn any comment into a sexual one. We just have this. Now, I know we're in church, but it's okay to laugh about this a little bit, all right? Just relax. Any comment. So Sheila comes to me and says, can you help me get this down? Oh, I'm going to help you get down. Right? It's a gift that we have. Sheila's like, hey, the light came on in the car saying we need an oil change. Oh, I'm going to change your oil. It's like, honey, can you marinate the chicken breast? Right, that is way too easy right there, right? We're microwaves. What that means is that we need to remember that sex starts long before the bedroom, and this is often lost on our simple one-track minds. And the longer that we're married, the more that we forget that truth. Now, we're a little better at this early on in our marriage, where, you know, maybe there's a little romance and a little flirting going on, and there's a little squeeze and a kiss, and then we kind of, you know, we let her simmer a little bit, and there's texts that go on, or a phone call, or, you know, we sneak a card in the lunch, or something like that. We understood it early on. But now you get in 10 years into the marriage, and everything changes, right? We've gone from Marvin Gaye's, let's get it on, to Larry the Cable Guy's, let's get her done. Right? It just, we lose it, right? Well, great sex starts before the bedroom. And romance is a key to both couples having a fulfilled sex life. And we're going to look at the Song of Solomon, what Solomon has to say. Chapter 4, verse 1. If you have your Bibles, you can turn there. If it's on your phone, you can jump to that. Look what he says. Song of Solomon 4, 1. He says, how beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. Your eyes behind your veil are doves. So, brother's got game, right? He's kind of waxing poetic here. Look what he says next. Your hair is like a flock of goats. Now go back. Go back, Rusty. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from the hill of Gilead. All right, brother lost it right there, right? Now, I would suggest you don't try that on your spouse tonight, saying your hair is like a flock of goats that we saw at the petting zoo the other day, right? Not very romantic. Not only will you have achieved your desired result, but you probably not be sleeping in the desired bed, right? You're going to be out, right? Now, a Jewish woman would always have her hair up, and it would come down for her husband, and he's commenting to this intimate part of this new relationship that is going on, where he's saying, your hair is down, and I like it. I haven't seen you in this way before, and so this was a big deal. Now, I probably wouldn't explain it as a flock of goats, but back then, that was a compliment of this idea of simmering, sex starting long before the bedroom. Now, Solomon continues to wax poetic. Look at verse 2. He says, your teeth are like a flock of sheep, just shorn, coming up from the washing. What he's saying is, your breath doesn't smell like skunk. That's what he's saying right there. Again, it was a compliment, maybe not in our time, but it was a compliment. I don't know where in the marriage it happens, but early on in our relationship, did not matter what breath was like, right? Woke up in the morning, you know, it was all good. But somewhere in the marriage relationship, Sheila leaned over and said, good morning. And I was like, not anymore, it ain't, right? Now we have a king-size bed, mainly because I need a vapor barrier there. Hey, am I right? It happened. I don't know when it happens in the marriage, but all of a sudden it's like, your breath has gotten worse from when we were first married. So, you know, this is just something that you guys, if you're not married, you can have something to look forward to. Now, let's break for a moment to talk about this idea of desire, because men are microwaves, women often are crockpots. Not all the time. I know this doesn't apply to everyone. For a man, our path to sex usually looks like this. We'll put it up on the screen. It usually goes from desire, next screen there, Rusty. Desire equals arousal equals sex. Very simple for a man, right? All flows in naturally. They all kind of run into one another. It's simple. We have one-track minds. That's the way it works. Desire is either there or it's right around the corner. It's very simple for men. The problem is, for billions of people in the world, it doesn't work like that. Mainly for women, right? Women look something more like this. We'll put it up on the screen. Women is time, and that time may be hours, plus arousal equals desire equals sex, meaning that often for the woman, desire comes after the arousal part. Now, for a guy, it doesn't work like that. Desire is always there, for especially after children and things like that start to happen. It takes time. It takes a little bit of work, and then the desire can kick in. Now, this creates a problem because guys are right at desire, ready to go, and a woman may take more time in order for that to happen. And so sometimes there can be this sort of a conflict. There are times that I approach my wife. I've cleared all this with my wife before I tell you any of this, so it's not like a shock to her. There are times when I put my best move forward, and I approach her, and I've planned this out for hours in advance, and I'll approach her, and I'll say something romantic like, "Do you wanna?" So, now, the answer that I'll get, I'm sorry, my children are in here, and they're never going to look at it the same way, but it's all right. The answer that I sometimes get from her is this, and it's very telling. She says, "I wanna." I mean, I want to, but right now I don't. Here's what she's saying. She's saying, like, if you can spend some time and work at it a little bit, we can get the desire there, and we can both get to where you want to be right now. But it's going to take some work. And sometimes I go to work, and sometimes I go to bed, right? Because, you know, it all depends how hard I want to work at it. Sometimes something good's on ESPN, and I'm like, we'll wait for another day. Now, guys, we cannot become angry because our wives do not have that same desire, especially after children. You know, with age, all of our sex drive changes. But we can't get angry because the desire is not the same. In other words, we have to bring out that desire because great sex starts long before the bedroom. Look at it in terms of hours, not in terms of minutes often, right? It's a slow roasted chicken. A little flirting, a little seasoning, a little kiss, a little note, and then you just let her simmer, right? It's gonna take some work because we're different as created beings. Now, that means she has no desire. Who cares? Men, bring out the desire. You can be the initiator. All right? Tonight, just say, "I am the initiator." You may not feel like it now, but you will when I'm through. Right? You can be the initiator in this. And ladies, give the guy a chance. All right? We're talking married couples. Give the brother a chance to get your motor running, all right? This idea of sexual fulfillment is key in the marriage relationship. It's a gift in how God has created us to interact with one another. Look at Song of Solomon 4, verse 3. He says, "Your lips are like scarlet ribbon. Your mouth is lovely. Your temples behind your veil are like the halves of pomegranates." Now, he's not saying like you got two big, you know, tumors here. He's talking about your cheeks are rosy and they're flush. Now, buckle your seatbelts because he's moving down the body. Now, verse 4, he says, "Your neck is like the Tower of David, built with the coarsest of stone. On it hang thousands, a thousand shields, all of them shields of warriors." Here's what he's saying. Odd compliment. But in this culture, women were often mistreated, seen as second-class citizens, and often seen as the property of their men. And so what he's saying is you walk with your head held high, that your chin is up, and you have this confidence about you, that you're secure, you're strong, and I like that about you. Now, remember in verse 1, she has this, of chapter 1, she has this internal struggle where she says, dark am I. Remember when this relationship first starts? Back then, if you were dark-skinned, it was because you had to work outside, meaning you were in a family of a commoner. But if you had white, fair skin, it meant that you were wealthy and you were kept out of the sun. And so she had this thing that she says, dark am I, meaning I'm not what culture says is going to be beautiful because my skin is not white, but it's dark. But then she puts on this little phrase. She says, dark am I, yet beautiful. And I like that part of her saying, look, I don't measure up to what society says has to be beautiful right now. That I don't measure up to what culture says is beautiful. Did you hear that SI is now, quote, putting on plus size models from size 12? It's like, that's their idea of plus size, because we have the same thing of what culture places upon us as beautiful. And she's saying, I don't fit what culture says is beautiful. My skin is dark, yet I know I'm beautiful. Ladies, have confidence in who you are. Have confidence in what you are and how God has created you and where you are at today, to walk with your head high and to push aside all the junk that society says you need to look like and be like in order to be beautiful, right? That means when you're married, work what your good mama gave you, all right? Have confidence in that. That means, you know, it's pretty clear. I ain't no size 2, but I can shake it like I'm supposed to do. Right, ladies? Because I got that boom boom that my man's going to chase with all the right junk and all the whatever. He's saying, look, I like your confidence. You're not walking around with your head down and your eyes down. You're like, I am dark-skinned, but I'm beautiful. I have flaws, but I am beautiful. And so he says, I like your confidence. Now he continues to move down a little bit. It's going to get a little awkward for some of us. Verse 5, he says, your breasts are like two fawns, like twin fawns of a gazelle that browse among the lilies. Now, guys, all right, listen. If you're a hunter, some of you guys are, right? I'm talking to some of you just to put in your permit to be drawn. You see twin fawns in the field, right? How do you approach them? You're coming in quiet and soft and gentle, right? You're coming in slowly. You're not busting through the bushes and saying, twin fawns! Honk, right? That's not what you're doing. Or else suddenly the fawns are running for the forest. There's this idea here of what is taking place. Tenderness is a part and a key to what great sex should be all about. So great sex, it starts, yes, before the bedroom, but great sex continues to take place even beyond that, and there has to be tenderness that is involved. Now, let me just touch briefly on this idea of the pace of life that we're all in. Life is crazy right now. Life is hectic. We're all, you know, going at it a thousand miles an hour. And that might mean that this idea of sex is that we might have to prioritize it and actually put it on the calendar, which I know sounds weird. When I was younger and someone said that, I was like, oh, that's the stupidest thing I've heard. But it may actually need to be something where we're carving out time to be together, right? We're actually going to spend some time in that. It may mean to have a conversation with your spouse to ask them, what do you find romantic? What does that look like to you? And I asked Sheila this early on in our marriage. And what she said was romantic was nothing what I thought was romantic. You know, her idea of romance was when our kids were little, that, well, you put the kids to bed or you bathe them or you tell me to go sit down while you do the dishes. That's romantic to me. I'm like, that's romance? Are you sure it's not when I get out of the shower with a towel around my waist and drop it and say, I got something to show you? Because I kind of thought that was romance. Right, guys? We miss this completely, right? I jumped ahead of this, but Rusty, go to chapter 7, verse 7 and 8. He says, your stature is like that of a palm, and your breasts are like clusters of fruit. Now, look at the next part. It's going to shock some of you. He said, I will climb the palm tree and take hold of its fruit. Right, there's this idea, this time that's going to be taken because great sex starts outside of the bedroom. But men, because we're microwaves, oftentimes we don't want to climb the tree. You know, give me a cherry picker, or I'll twist them, I'll throw rocks at them, somehow just get me the fruit. That's what we think. And here it says, I'm going to take the time to climb the tree because great sex starts way before the bedroom. Second part here that I already touched on was tenderness. Song of Solomon, verse 4, verse 5. It says, your breasts are like two fawns, twin fawns of a gazelle that browse among the lilies. Approach matters. Tenderness matters. I mean, men, we can work on our approach, and ladies, you can just give any approach, right? Especially after you've been married for some time, it is validating to a man for his wife to take the initiative and to start something. It makes us feel like, you know, like we're supermen. And so, ladies, you can start the approach too. Approach matters, and you can be part of that. Now, men, here's a little free advice for us. Something that we can all be involved in is this thing called NST. Put it on the screens there. It means non-sexual touching. The idea is it's touching our wives without an end goal in mind. Now, some of us are thinking, why would I ever do that, right? Now, here's the reason. Is we never, men, listen, we never want our wives to feel that the only time we'll be affectionate, or the only time that we will touch them, or the only time that we will actively engage with them is when we're interested in sex. Because eventually, and I've done a lot of counseling, the wife's going to say, I feel like the only thing I'm good for is to fulfill his sexual desires. Because the only time he's nice to me, the only time he touches me, the only time he approaches me is when he's in the mood. All right? Non-sexual touching. It's part of tenderness, and it's something that we have to learn and understand so our wives don't feel like they're just a play toy, and the only time we're come around is when we're interested. So great sex is tenderness. Look at the next one. Great sex is passionate. It continues to work its way down the body. Verse 6. It says, until the day breaks and the shadows flee, I will go to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of incense. I'm not even sure what that totally means, but I think I like it. I think what he's saying is, look, all night long, we're going to share some passion together. Because sex, a gift from God, is supposed to be passionate. It's how God created it to be. Now, let's talk about passion and creative expression inside of the bedroom for married couples. Sex is given for pleasure, right? It's a gift from God. Now, some of you may not agree with me on this, but hear me out. My view is that whatever a married couple agrees upon behind the bedroom door is fair game. As long as it does not involve issues of sin. Other people, off limits, it's clear, right? Bringing pornography into the bedroom, off limits. If you do, I promise you, your marriage will take a hit. Your love life will take a hit. It's only a matter of time before it will, because you're setting up unrealistic expectations. This idea of fantasizing about other people, off limits, right? Not what God would have for us. But what two people agree upon, married couples, inside of the bedroom, as long as it doesn't involve sin, I don't think is an issue of sin. So that means it's okay to experiment in the bedroom. Experimenting might be using a feather. Perverted is using the chicken. Do you get the difference there, what I'm talking about? All right, now listen, I know it's touchy and some of you are like, I'm very uncomfortable. Listen, this is how God created us to be. It's a gift, okay? It's a gift to us. Now, we're gonna talk about when we cross bounds and boundaries and what that looks like in a moment, so you know, you have to hear me out on all of this stuff. A common question is, well, what happens when one partner in a marriage wants to creatively express their lovemaking and the other person is uncomfortable with it? Or what happens when, you know, maybe one has a broader view of parameters in sex, a married couple? Remember, we revert back to our last point that great lovemaking is always tender and you always, always, always respect your spouse. And if your spouse is uncomfortable with something, then there's no push on that, right? Because it's not just about self-gratification, right? It's about mutually coming together under the marriage covenant because it's how God has created it. Now, this is one of the problems, men and women, because you're increasing in this as well, and this idea of pornography. Because it sets up these unrealistic expectations in our minds, and then we want those to be fulfilled because we've sewn into them for so long that we're no longer stimulated without that. And so we're, you know, constantly pushing the envelope further and further and further, and eventually it just becomes damaging to the sexual relationship in the marriage, because lovemaking should always be tender. I'm okay with experimenting, but it's always mutually, it's always where both are comfortable with it, and it never involves bringing in issues of sin into the relationship. Now, if you have specifics that you want to talk to myself, or if you're a woman, talk to my wife, I'd be glad to give you our opinion on that. Some other people may differ with that, and that, you know, that's totally cool. Ladies, don't come and ask me. Men, don't come and ask my wife. We're not going to answer it. But individually, if you have questions, I'd be glad to give you an opinion. May not be right, but it will be an opinion. The next part of great sex involves privacy. Look at chapter 7, verse 11. He says, come, my love, let us go out to the fields and spend the night among the wildflowers. Here's what he's saying. Let's just get away from everything, and let's get away from everyone, and let's focus on each other, and let's just be alone. Now, on this issue of privacy, let's just say it like it is. Children are game changers in the sexual relationship of a husband and wife. I mean, let's just say it. They ruin everything, right? They just do. I mean, maybe not for the woman, but for the guy, they ruin everything. And so this can become difficult. Now, if you're newly married and you're about to have your first baby, or if you're not married and you're going to be someday, you need to listen, both male and female. Children are game changers in this area, all right? They can ruin it for a season. They're always wanting more, they're always around, they're always grabbing, they're always feeding, they barge into your room when they're older, they still, you know, they barge into your room when they're younger, they want to sleep in your bed. It's always a mess, right? They ruin things. That's just the reality of it. Here's the thing, though. They present this problem. Mom's being touched, mom's being poked, mom's being fed on all day long, but dad hasn't changed. Desire, arousal, sex. Dad's the same. And so dad comes home, looking at wife, who is now a little larger in some areas because of the feeding, and he's like, how you doing, girl? And the wife gives him that look like, you touch these, I will kill you. Right? Men, you know you've been there, and wives, you probably have, you know, you've been there as well, because children change things. Now, the key to this is communication. And what it's going to look like. That means you need to find a new rhythm of life. But ladies, you can't tell your husband, well, you'll get some when they move out. 18 years. Right? It doesn't work. Because this idea of sexual fulfillment was meant to take place in the marriage relationship. And so it's going to take some communication. It's going to need to be finding a new rhythm of life. Man, after we had our first baby, it was loads of communication on what this looks like. How's it going to, you know, there was some tension going on. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Privacy also includes individual privacy, meaning that not just privacy away from the kids, but privacy alone with ourselves. So, you know, if mom's a stay-at-home mom and dad, you come home and she's been around the children all day, you may need to say, just go away, go to Starbucks, take a book, go to the park, do whatever you want to do, and go spend an hour or two alone by yourself, because it refuels that emotional tank. Can't expect her to be in the mood. Two and three children at home, you walk in the door and you're ready to go, and she's like, I haven't had a second to myself all day. And so privacy is not just privacy away from children, but privacy to ourselves as well. We cannot neglect ourselves in this area. Marriages, listen, maybe you have, since you have children, you cannot neglect this area of your marriage once children come. It is far too important, and especially, as we're going to talk about in a moment, it's far too important from the male side of this as well. We're going to touch on that in a second. Second to last thing we're going to look at is trust and exclusivity, a key to great sex. I can think of nothing more that puts you in a more vulnerable, intimate space than engaging in sexual relationships with your spouse, right? I mean, everything is to be seen. Look at what he says back in chapter 4, verse 7. He says, you are altogether beautiful, my darling, and there is no flaw in you. Now, this is important to understand. Our spouses need to understand, male, female, both, that they are the only person we choose and want to be with. This is one of the other issues of pornography, because in the mind, you know, the mind is racing. This idea of trust and exclusivity, that our spouse knows that you're the only person I want to be with. You know, men, our wives are assaulted by all of these images of women who have been stuffed, puffed, shrunk, plumped, painted, airbrushed, glossed, matted, and say, now be that. They have to know that you're the one that I've chosen to be with. Ladies, your husband needs to know you're the one that I want to, not just that I have to be with, but you're the one that I want to be with. Now, was there really no flaw in her? I mean, come on. Of course there was a flaw. There's a flaw in all of us, right? But love has a way of looking past the flaw and only seeing beauty. Let me put this picture up, Rusty. This is a picture of Sheila and I when we were married. It's 24 years old. You can tell by that look on my face I had one thing in mind, right? It's just the way it rolls. Go back to the other screen. I don't want that to be up there the whole time. Now, some vulnerability here. Some of you may not totally understand it. Some of you ladies may think he's a creep, but just gonna, I've always been transparent. 24 years old, married. And when you're 24 years old, everything is in its place, right? Everything is high and lifted up. Everything looks good. And I remember at 24, 25 years old, I would look at, not lustfully, but look at women. I had a meeting with someone today. We were talking about this older gentleman, older than me. And I was telling him that I'd look at older women and I would think, how am I going to, what's it going to be like when Sheila is, you know, 45, 50 years old? Again, I've talked to her. She knows I'm going to share this. And I would wonder, what's that going to be like? Because at 24 years old, I'm a guy. And everything is in its place at 24. I'm thinking, man, after kids, and this is just, you know, in my thinking, what's it going to be like? Well, about 6-8 months ago, I had a conversation with Sheila the night before. I was watching her sleep. I don't sleep much. You know, I'm up every night at 2 o'clock. So if you ever want to get pancakes, text me. We'll go to Denny's. And so I'm watching her sleep one night. And a week later, I had a conversation, and I started it off like this. I was like, I hope this comes across as a compliment. Because I wasn't sure. And I told her, when I was younger, I would think, what's it going to be like when she's 45 and 55 and 65? And how do you feel about them when everything changes? Not that I wouldn't love her, but will that same arousal be there? And will that same looking at her body and thinking, dang, that's a masterpiece, you know? And I was looking at her as she slept. And she's not the 24-year-old woman that I married. And I cleared this with her. Has little lines around her eyes. And I'm watching her sleep. And I don't say this because I'm on stage, but all I could think about was, God, she is beautiful. That's all I could think of. Is it because she doesn't have any flaws? No. Does she look at me and think, man, you're sexy because I don't have any flaws? I got a lot of flaws. I put on 40 pounds since marriage, right? Things are different now. But love has a way of seeing the beauty of the individual. And that's the way that God brought it together. And so now I'm thinking, I get it now. There's going to be a day when we're 80 and I'm going to look at her and I'm going to think, you're gorgeous. And I told her in that conversation, I don't know what pill will be on the market to make it happen, but we will find it and magic will occur. Because I'm thinking, you're going to be beautiful. Now, it may kill me at 80, but come on. I get to see Jesus and I get to have sex before seeing him. Winning, right? So, I know some of you are thinking, I don't like that, but that's the way that's the way most men, those are things that we think about. And I was thinking, I get it now, that the longer you're in love and the more that you're devoted to one person, it's not that there are no flaws there, you just don't notice them anymore. It's like, it doesn't matter anymore. It's like, yeah, it's just, you're gorgeous, and when you're 75, you'll be beautiful. And when you're 95 and I'm dead because men always die earlier before wives because you kill us, you'll still be beautiful. All right. Exclusivity. Talk about this. We're going to wrap this up in 5 minutes. Think about it. When you marry, what you're saying is you are the only legitimate way that I have to express my sexual desires is with a married person. And when that doesn't happen, we put our spouse in a position of that if they satisfy themselves outside of the marriage relationship, it's sin, right? Now, ladies, let me just say this quickly as we get to close to wrapping up here. For men, when we are rejected over and over and over and over again sexually, it is like to a man like it is to you when your husband refuses to speak with you and engage in any type of long-term conversation with you. It becomes, in a man, it almost becomes a crisis mode in us. That if it goes for so long, it's like we're consumed with it. Brothers, don't leave me up here alone, right? Just nudge your wife and say, yeah, that's the truth. That when we go too long, it's like it almost becomes a crisis in us. And so this idea of when a man is rejected over and over again, he starts to feel like less of a man. And now we've already talked about men, how we approach our wives and non-sexual touching, but you know, there's play that has to go on both sides. And so it can become a crisis to a man when that's not taking place. Here's my suggestion to you: open conversation, open communication with you. Song of Solomon 7:10, here's what it should look like when one man devotes himself to one woman, one woman to one man. He says this, I belong to my beloved and his desire is for me. And we could turn that around, that he says, I belong to my beloved and her desire is for me. Last point, great sex is holy. Started off the series saying great sex was never intended to just be two bodies coming together. Genesis 2:24, we'll put it up on the screens, where God's idea was that man leaves his father and mother, is united to his wife, the two become one flesh. It was supposed to be a holy, intimate moment that was occurring between a husband and a wife. So not only is sex fun and thrilling and passionate and creates babies, but there's a spiritual component where the two of us become one. And in a very real sense, it's a reminder that we're in a covenant. Song of Solomon 6:2, it says, I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. That every time that you engage in this, it is a way of renewing that covenant, that's saying, I am yours, you are mine, I am devoted completely to you. Because under God's original plan, sex was designed to be holy. Here's what this means. All of stuff that's out there that's bombarding us with sex and 50 Shades of Grey and all of those types of things. Let me tell you what God would say. 50 Shades has nothing on what I created it to be. That's just the reality. That the world will push on us this idea of sex and what it's supposed to be, and God's like, they don't get it. As the creator of it, it is far deeper and greater than what the world portrays it to be. And unfortunately, we have polluted it. But God's best for us is man and woman coming together in this idea of sexual satisfaction, because it's a key component in what the relationship is supposed to be. So here's what I leave you with. If you are in that situation, a season of life, you may need to start a conversation with your spouse. And I would ask that it's given very respectfully, and that there's grace that is given on both sides, that communication can start to happen, and that you will become healthier in this area. It's too important to not have the conversation, all right? There's nothing dirty about it, nothing nasty about it. Have open communication and see where God will lead you in this area. Because sex is not just for them. God says, no, sex is inside of the church. I created it. It's a gift to you. Enjoy it in the boundaries that I've created it to be enjoyed in, single people, and reap all of the benefits that come with it. All right, so a little awkward. I know some of you are thinking, I'm never coming back here. I'm sorry, but I would rather be a church that talks about things openly than kind of dance around the issues. And matter of fact, I was thinking 2 weeks ago as I was preparing for one of the messages in this series, I was at Paradise working, and I thought, I am extremely grateful that we have a church that allows me to speak on subjects like this and to be myself and to be open and to communicate these things to you. And so to you, I appreciate that. So I know this is an awkward subject, awkward topic, but I think it's something that we needed to touch on, especially in light of what's taking place in our culture. All right, next week, 9 and 10:30, you can be here, right? Today, as always, we're going to need help on the stage to bust this down, especially next week, because we're crunching in times of when we need to be out of here after that 10:30 service. I'm going to need some people up here to help bust this down and get us ready to head out. Two services next week, and if there's anything that you need down here in the front, myself will be here, my wife will be here, some of our prayer team members would be here, and we would love to pray for you. Start a new series next week. I'm excited about it, so make sure you come on back. Pray with me. Lord, why don't you stand with me as well? If you're married, just grab your spouse, grab their hand. If you're seriously dating somebody, grab their hand in a way of saying, let's honor God together with our bodies, and pray with me. So Lord, boy, an awkward subject today, and one that I wanted to enter into with some humor but still get across the importance of what you've created. And so I pray that there would be open communication among the married couples in here, and that it would be respectful and open and honest. And when things are shared that might be difficult to hear, that grace would be offered. And so I pray that, Lord, I pray that it would strengthen our marriages here at Reveal. I pray that we would be an example to those who are not in the church or not following you, that there would be something about our marriages that others are attracted to and drawn to because we have followed after you as individuals and as a married couple. I pray for single people, Lord, that you would give grace to engage in this gift within the boundaries that you have established. And it's not to ruin fun. It's to keep us from becoming broken. And so help in that area as well. Lord, I speak a blessing on every person here. Those who are married, those who are dating, those who are single and in a season of life of being single. God, would you accomplish in them all that you want to accomplish? That their focus would first be about you and you would bring healing and restoration and set them up for when that moment may come that they would be the person they need to be to engage in a healthy relationship. And so I pray that over our church. Pray for next week as we launch into two services, that it would be a time of excitement for our church, that we would have opportunity to invite people to come, that you would give us the opportunity to win people for Jesus. Give us the opportunity to present the gospel message and to help those who are hurting and those who are far from you, that we might assist in closing that gap. We may be kingdom participants. And so I pray this week a blessing upon each one of us. We ask in the name of Jesus Christ, our Savior. Amen.